You can't scroll through certain online discussions these days without seeing the name Hexerhelm pop up.
Oh, yeah. It's everywhere in some circles.
Right. It's got this reputation for packing on muscle, turning back the clock, even giving athletes an edge.
Mm-hmm.
So for this deep dive, we're laser focused on the science behind Hexerolin.
Good plan.
Our goal. To really unpack how this stuff works, what the early research tells us, where the potential pitfalls lie, and maybe what some respected voices are saying, or perhaps not saying about it.
Absolutely. Let's dive right in then. Yeah. So Hexerolin, which you might also see called Examorelin in some research papers.
Examorelin. Okay.
Yeah, it's a synthetic hexapeptide. Think of it like a very short protein, just, six amino acids linked together.
Six amino acids, got it.
And it belongs to this class of compounds called growth hormone-releasing peptides, GHRPs for short.
GHRPs, right.
And as the name suggests, its main function is really to stimulate the release of growth hormone, GH. It does this primarily by mimicking the actions of ghrelin. Now, you probably know ghrelin as that hormone that makes your stomach rumble.
A hunger hormone, yeah.
Exactly. But it has this other critical role. It signals the release of GH.
Okay, so hexerolin is basically like impersonating the hunger hormone to boost growth hormone. How does that work at the cellular level?
Well, it's all about hitting the right receptors in your body. Hexerolin binds to and activates the ghrelin receptor. It's also known as the growth hormone secretagogue receptor, or GHSR.
GHSR.
Mm-hmm. And these receptors are found in really key areas for hormone control, specifically the pituitary gland.
The master gland.
Right, often called the master gland, yeah. And also the hypothalamus, which is kind of like the brain's hormonal command center, sending signals down to the pituitary.
Okay.
So when hexerolin latches onto these GHSRs, it's like flipping a switch. It tells the pituitary, hey, release your stored growth hormone.
That just floods out.
Well, interestingly, no. The release happens in pulses. And that's important because it actually mirrors the natural way our bodies release GH.
Ah, pulsatile release. Okay, I get it.
Right.
So it's not just a constant drip, drip, drip of growth hormone. Now, does hexerolin do anything else to maybe amplify its effects?
There is some evidence suggesting another mechanism, yeah. Research indicates hexerolin might also inhibit somatostatin.
Somatostatin, that's the break, right.
Exactly. Think of it as the body's natural break on growth hormone release. It tells the pituitary to slow down GH production.
Okay.
So if hexerolin can sort of dampen the effects of this break.
It lets more GH out.
Precisely. It further enhances the overall release. And what's particularly intriguing, some early studies hint that hexerolin might even interact directly with other receptor pathways.
Oh, beyond just GH.
Yeah, potentially. This could explain some observed effects on, say, metabolism and the cardiovascular system that seem to go beyond just its influence on growth hormone levels.
Okay, we've got a handle on the how. Now let's get into the what happens. We keep hearing about this successful data from preclinical studies. What did those experiments actually show?
Yeah, and it's really important to frame this correctly. When we talk about successful data at this stage, we're primarily looking at findings from, in vitro studies, experiments in test tubes, and research using animal models.
Right, not humans yet.
Not humans yet, exactly. Mm-hmm. The most consistent finding in these preclinical settings is hexerolin's strong ability to increase growth hormone levels. Studies in different animals, especially rats, have shown pretty significant dose-dependent increases in GH concentration in their blood after they were given hexerolin.
Dose-dependent, meaning more hexerolin, more GH?
Generally, yes, up to a point.
Okay. And with that surge in growth hormone in the animals, what potential benefits did these initial studies suggest?
Well, based on those elevated GH levels in the animal models, researchers started looking at a range of potential benefits. First, muscle growth and regeneration.
The big one.
The big one, yeah. The idea is that increased GH could boost muscle protein synthesis, building new muscle tissue, potentially leading to hypertrophy or muscle growth, and maybe faster recovery after exercise. Some even speculate about tissue repair.
Okay, what else?
Second, fat loss. Growth hormone is involved in lipolysis.
Breaking down fat.
Right, breaking down stored fat. So higher GH could theoretically help reduce body fat percentage. Third, bone density. GH is linked to bone health, too. And some preclinical work suggests hexerolin might have positive effects there.
So muscle, fat, bone sounds like the classic GH effects.
Hmm.
But I have a feeling there's maybe more of the story here.
You're right. And this is where it gets really interesting, I think. Beyond those expected GH-linked benefits, some of the most compelling findings from these early studies involve direct effects of hexurlin, effects that seem to happen independently of its GH-releasing action.
Independently, how so?
For instance, in mouse models of myocardial infarction, basically, a heart attack.
Okay.
Hexurlin showed it could help preserve heart muscle function, reduce cardiac fibrosis, that's scarring of the heart tissue.
Wow.
And even shift the nervous system towards a more relaxed parasympathetic state. This suggests potential anti-inflammatory and anti-fibrotic effects directly on the heart.
That's significant.
It is. And furthermore, studies in rats indicated hexurlin might help suppress atherosclerotic plaque formation, those fatty deposits in arteries, and maybe even contribute to lower cholesterol levels. So yeah, while the muscle building hype is strong, this early science hints hexurlin's impact might extend to actually protecting the heart. It's a fascinating area.
Wow, those direct cardiovascular effects in animals sound really promising. But I know, we can't just jump to conclusions about humans, right?
Exactly. And it is absolutely critical for you, the listener, to understand this. These preclinical findings, while exciting, are just that, preclinical.
Test tubes in animals.
Test tubes in animals. They do not automatically translate to the same effects or the same level of safety in humans. Human clinical trials looking specifically at these wider applications of hexurlin, they're quite limited.
So we can't assume what works in a rat works in us.
We absolutely cannot make that assumption.
Yeah.
The human system is far more complex.
That's a really crucial distinction.
I do.
Okay, so let's switch gears then and talk about the potential downsides.
Yeah.
What kind of side effects are we looking at with something like hexurlin?
Right. Given its potency in stimulating GH and its potential to interact with other hormonal systems, the side effect list is definitely something to consider seriously.
Okay.
Some of the more commonly reported, or at least potential side effects, include increased appetite, makes sense.
Yeah.
It mimics ghrelin.
Right, the hunger hormone again.
Yep. Fluid retention or water retention, that's pretty common with elevated GH. Then you have things like injection site reactions, redness, swelling, pain, local stuff. Some people report headaches, dizziness. A tingling sensation in the hands or feet can also happen, possibly linked to the GH increase.
Paresthesia, sometimes called?
Yeah, possibly. And interestingly, fatigue has been reported by some users. Also, joint and muscle pain, which might seem counterintuitive, but can occur with big swings in GH levels.
Okay, those sound like maybe manageable issues for some. But I know there are bigger concerns when you start messing with growth hormone levels so strongly.
You're absolutely right. The more significant concerns really revolve around hexurlin's impact on other hormones. It's known to be less selective than some other GHRPs.
Less selective, meaning?
Meaning it's more likely to cause elevations in both prolactin and cortisol.
Ah, okay. Prolactin and cortisol.
Yeah. And these increases seem to be dose dependent. So higher doses, potentially bigger increases in prolactin and cortisol.
And that's bad because?
Well, chronically elevated prolactin can cause issues like gynecomastia in men, breast tissue development, sexual dysfunction in both sexes, menstrual irregularities in women, and constantly high levels of cortisol, the stress hormone. Well, that can negatively impact mood, sleep, metabolism, overall health. It's not something you generally want elevated long term.
Definitely not. And what about those encouraging cardiovascular findings in the animal studies? Does that mean it's likely safe for the heart in humans?
That's a really important question. And the answer is not necessarily. We just don't know for sure.
Okay.
While that preclinical data showed some positive cardiovascular effects, we absolutely cannot assume the same safety profile in humans based on that alone. There are anecdotal reports, plus broader concerns with GH secretagogues generally, suggesting potential cardiovascular risks, especially when used without medical supervision and proper monitoring.
So potential benefits in animals, potential risks in humans. Murky water.
Very murky. And finally, with prolonged or high dose use, there's this risk of hormonal imbalance and also receptor desensitization.
Meaning it stops working as well.
Potentially, yes. The body's receptors might become less responsive over time, reducing its effectiveness. And again, and this is the key theme, because we lack extensive long-term human clinical trials for these uses, the full picture of these side effects in humans just isn't clear.
This definitely paints a much more nuanced picture than, you know, some of the online hype suggests.
Yeah.
So let's bring in some of the prominent voices. Have figures like Andrew Huberman, Joe Rogan, Dr. Craig Conover.
Yeah.
Have they talked about hexerelin? What's their take?
Yeah, that's a great way to gauge the sort of expert sentiment. Let's take Andrew Huberman. He's known for his very rigorous science-based approach.
Okay.
He's covered peptides quite a bit. He really drills down into mechanisms, benefits, but crucially the risks. Given his emphasis on solid scientific evidence and understanding side effects, especially for compounds from, let's say, less regulated sources.
The gray market.
Exactly. It's pretty unlikely he'd explicitly endorse widespread or unsupervised hexerelin use. His discussions tend to focus on peptides with more robust clinical data or those integrated safely under medical guidance.
Did he ever mention it specifically?
Well, interestingly, in his conversation with Dr. Craig Conover about GH peptides, they focused more on things like ipamorlin, tesamorlin, sermorolin, often with CJC-1295. Hexerelin wasn't really a focus.
Why do you think that is?
My guess. Likely due to its less favorable side effect profile compared to those others, especially the prolactin and cortisol issue. So despite the buzz, experts like Huberman seem, well, cautious about hexerelin.
That fits his evidence-first approach. Okay, what about Joe Rogan? He often talks about pushing limits, supplements.
Yeah, Rogan definitely dives into fitness, longevity, performance enhancers. He's mentioned using peptides himself, TRT.
Right.
But while he covers a huge range of topics very openly, you don't really find him doing a deep scientific breakdown of hexerelin's specific mechanisms and side effects typically. His discussions often lean more towards compounds with broader, sometimes anecdotal, benefits for vitality, muscle mass.
Less focus on the nitty-gritty science, maybe.
Perhaps less on the granular detail compared to someone like Huberman. However, you will find hexerelin mentioned in the broader context of performance enhancement in discussions around Rogan's content sometimes. People associate it with that sphere.
Okay. And finally, Dr. Craig Conover. He actually uses peptide therapies with patients. What's his view likely to be?
Right. Dr. Conover works in precision medicine, uses peptides clinically. He has a very sophisticated understanding of these compounds, including the GH-influencing ones.
So he must use hexerelin then?
Well, not necessarily as a go-to. While hexerelin is potent in discussions like the one with Huberman, Conover often seems to prefer peptides with a cleaner side effect profile, like ipamorlin, for general wellness or performance.
Cleaner meaning less prolactin and cortisol issues.
Exactly. His emphasis is often on working closely with knowledgeable doctors using custom blends. It points to a cautious, personalized approach. This suggests he might be less inclined to recommend hexerelin first line because of those potential off-target hormonal effects.
So it seems like even among those who discuss or use peptides, hexerelin is maybe viewed with a bit more caution.
I think that's fair to say. It's potent, yes, but that potency comes with a potentially less desirable side effect profile compared to some other options in its class. So the experts seem aware of it, but perhaps approach it more guardedly.
So to wrap things up then, what are the absolute key things you think our listeners should really take away from this deep dive into hexerelin?
Okay. The essential takeaways are, number one, hexerelin is a synthetic peptide. Preclinical evidence shows it's powerful at stimulating growth hormone release.
Potent stuff.
Very potent. And this has led to suggestions, based mostly on animal models, of potential benefits for muscle, fat loss, bone health, maybe even cardiovascular function.
And potential upside.
Potential upside. But number two, and this is absolutely crucial, its use comes with a significant list of potential side effects. Increased appetite, water retention, and importantly, the risk of raising prolactin and cortisol levels.
Those hormonal side effects seem key.
They are a major consideration, yes.
And the human research, it just isn't there yet to back up widespread use for building muscle or anti-aging, right?
Precisely. That's takeaway number three. We have to emphasize the lack of extensive human clinical trials. We don't fully understand its long-term safety or effectiveness in humans for these broad applications, period.
So anyone thinking about this needs to be extremely careful.
Extremely careful. These are research compounds. They are not FDA-approved medications for general use. Getting them and using them outside of controlled research carries considerable risks, quality control, dosing, side effects.
So bottom line, what's the most important piece of advice for someone hearing the hype about hexerelin?
The most critical advice, talk to a qualified healthcare professional. Get evidence-based guidance. Get proper health monitoring before even considering compounds like this. They can give you a balanced view based on your health and the actual science.
That's really crucial. Okay, so as we bring this deep dive to a close, here's maybe a final thought for you to consider. When you really weigh the potential benefits of potent but largely unproven research compounds against the well-established advantages of more traditional wellness strategies, things like diet, exercise, sleep. It really prompts you to think deeply, doesn't it?
It really does.
About your own risk-reward assessment and where your long-term health priorities truly lie.
Indeed. It encourages that thoughtful reflection on what genuinely contributes to sustained health and well-being beyond the quick fix potential.